Saddam Hussein and 11 of his henchmen were formally transferred to the jurisdiction of the interim government of Iraq in Baghdad today. Tomorrow, they'll be charged with crimes against humanity in a special Iraqi court. Though legal proceedings are now underway, trials are not expected to begin for months. For now, all these suspects are being held in an American-run facility somewhere in or near Baghdad because the interim government cannot guarantee their safety, which raises a lot of questions about security for a trial, the safety of Saddam's lawyers and the judges and the witnesses and the fairness of the prosecution. This hour, the state of Iraq's judicial system, how it works and how it's being changed. A bit later in the program, we'll speak with Somini Sengupta of the New York Times, who's been reporting on the difficulties that Iraqi girls and women face in troubled times. And we'll hear about the extensive archives of Saddam Hussein's genocide against the Kurds, which await Iraq's eventual effort to come to terms with its past. But first, to Baghdad. Joining us now is Rajiv Chandrasekaran. He's the Baghdad bureau chief for the Washington Post, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Good to talk to you, Neil.
Rajiv, Iraq's new authorities took legal control of Saddam and 11 of his key deputies today. What actually happened? What was the process?
Well, what happened today was that some of the officials from this new special tribunal that has been set up to try Hussein and many of his deputies went to a U.S.-run detention facility in the Baghdad area, along with an Iraqi judge, and notified Saddam Hussein and these 11 others that they were now in Iraqi custody and that they would be brought before an Iraqi judge tomorrow, and that they were also sort of informed of their rights. They were informed that they would have the right to legal counsel and the right to remain silent and so forth.
So Saddam Hussein is no longer a prisoner of war, no longer under the protections of the Geneva Convention.
That's correct. He is now a criminal defendant in his own country, in Iraq, and he will be treated according to Iraqi law, although under sort of provisions of a special tribunal that was set up under the U.S. Occupation Authority late last year that guarantees defendants many of the same rights that they face in the United States and in the West. If, for instance, if Saddam Hussein cannot afford a lawyer, one will be appointed to him, that he will not be able to be questioned without the presence of a lawyer if he requests one.
Who are some of the others who were brought before this Iraqi judge and informed of their new status today?
Well, some of Saddam's sort of top lieutenants are among this group. One of the most notorious is a man named Ali Hassan al-Majid, who's also known as Chemical Ali. He was the man responsible for the Anfal campaign, which was a campaign of brutal suppression against ethnic Kurds in the late 1980s that included the use of chemical weapons against Kurdish villages. Former Vice President Taha Yassin Ramadan is in that group. Tariq Aziz, a name familiar to many Americans, is also there. Tariq Aziz was a former foreign minister, has appeared regularly to defend Saddam in international fora and even on television talk shows prior to the war. And two of Saddam's half-brothers, Barzan and Watvan, are also there. They're sort of a key henchmen of his and also believed to be culpable for many of the most serious atrocities committed during the nearly 24 years that Saddam Hussein was in power.
Is there any indication yet that they would be tried individually or all together?
No indications as yet. This is still in a very preliminary process. So there's not even a timetable for when a trial might start for any of these people. What's going to happen tomorrow is sort of the mother of all perp walks. They will be taken in to a court. They will be brought before a judge and told they're under arrest, told that they're being arrested under the suspicion of various crimes of likely will be things like war crimes and crimes against humanity. Then an investigative process begins. Now, although there has been an investigation ongoing for some months and even other sort of independent investigations by human rights groups for years, the tribunals, prosecutors, and investigating judges will have to get down to work, and this is going to be a long and laborious process. process. The president of the tribunal told me yesterday that they don't expect the first indictments for at least a couple of months. Then we're talking more work after that. So in all likelihood, the first trials probably won't start until very late this year, or probably more likely sometime next year.
And when you use the word tribunal, that suggests that they are going to be tried by a panel of judges rather than by a jury?
That's correct. It'll be a panel of judges, probably five judges. The judges will be Iraqi judges as well as Iraqi prosecutors and investigators, although there will be a fair number of American and other international advisors to this process, particularly in the investigative process. There's also a provision in the law that would allow the Iraqi government to bring in foreign legal advisors to help the judges and prosecutors if they so need, given that some of these defendants may retain foreign legal counsel and that they want to see that there is a fair fight, if you will, in the courtroom.
In Amman, Jordan today, a man named Mohammed Rashtan, he's one member of a 20-strong member legal team appointed by Saddam's wife to represent him, said, "This is a mockery of justice. We're facing clear legal violations. The allegations that this is going to be a fair trial is baseless." Any response to those kinds of allegations today in Baghdad?
Well, no direct response, but the Iraqis who have been involved in setting up and running this tribunal say that it will conform to the highest standards of legal procedure, that the law was written in consultation with the U.S. government, with input from human rights groups, that it will be open to the press, to the public, to international monitors. So it will be a transparent and open process that will include the most basic of protections for the accused. And they say, you know, it begins fundamentally with a presumption of innocence, even though the view on the street here roundly is that he's guilty of these crimes. I think that, you know, most Iraqis have already had a rush to judgment. But the people running this say this is going to be a process of, you know, modeled after war crimes tribunals in other parts of the world, and we'll stick to high standards.
If you have questions about Iraq's justice system and how it's being changed, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. And Wayne joins us on the line from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Wayne.
Hi to your guest. My question about the Saddam trial is is he actually going to be able to start speaking about things that happened earlier in his a rise to power? I mean, given the fact that we were essentially his ally, and if you look at another fact, like when he turned over his weapons of mass destruction paperwork, the 24,000 pages, we seized the documents, deleted 2,000 pages, which indicated that many of our major corporations like Hewlett-Packard, General Electric, Halliburton were all operating outside the sanctions. I mean, does your guest really feel that this is going to be some fair and open proceeding, given the fact that it's going to be just totally embarrassing for us?
That's a very good question, and I think, you know, that is certainly a big worry for some of the people organizing this tribunal, and also for the U.S. government, that Saddam Hussein may seek to use the forum of the tribunal as a bully pulpit, just like Slobodan Milosevic has done at his war crimes tribunal in The Hague over the past few years. The organizer of the tribunal, Salem Chalabi, who is a relative of Ahmed Chalabi, the Iraqi National Congress leader, has said that they will be fairly strict procedures that will are intended to prevent defendants from using the tribunal as a propaganda forum and as a sort of a soapbox. But it will be a very interesting issue, and one that I think will sort of venture into uncharted territory, just how much of some of these, the past dealings that his Saddam's government had with the United States in the 1980s when Iraq was a close ally of the United States, how much of that may well be deemed admissible by the judges, and how much of that may come out, and just the degree of embarrassments that are there. This is a key question that has been unresolved and likely won't be resolved until the trial gets going.
Could I just ask
sure.
another question that's related to that?
Yeah, if you could keep it short.
Yeah. Well, for instance, if he has to show a defense for the gassing of the Kurds, et cetera, it's well and widely known that we provided him with that technology. Couldn't he use that as a way to get past that?
Well, there's an even more basic question than that, Wayne, and that's raised by his lawyer in Amman today. This, again, Mohammad Rashdan, who said they're afraid of bringing out the truth because a fair trial would be an indictment, he said, of President George W. Bush.
Yeah.
He has to first prove whether his, the United States, meaning entry into Iraq, was legal or not. And is there any indication, Rajiv, that that's going to be an element in the trial?
Well, the specific elements at this point are still left to be determined. There are no formal charges yet, so there's no prosecutorial strategy. That's all months away. But one can certainly expect that all of these things will be raised, and even if they may not be admitted as evidence, his lawyers will seek to argue them and will try to argue them in a public forum. So, regardless of the outcome, there could be a whole series of sort of embarrassing moments for the United States and for other nations that supported Saddam Hussein over the years.
Wayne, thanks very much for the call. And Rajiv, we want to thank you for your time tonight in Baghdad. We know it's late. Thanks for staying up to talk with us.
Pleasure to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Rajiv Chandrasekaran is the Baghdad bureau chief for The Washington Post, and he joined us on the phone from Baghdad. Iraqis had an extensive judicial system in place long before the American invasion and occupation. Here to talk about Iraq's legal structure is Sharif Bassiouni, a law professor at DePaul University in Chicago. Bassiouni is president of the International Human Rights Law Institute at DePaul, which is working on a project funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development to rebuild legal education in Iraq. And he joins us now from his office in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
So what sort of legal structure existed in Iraq during Saddam's time?
Well, the legal system that existed in Iraq as of the 20s is very close to other Arab legal systems like the Egyptian one. It was partly modeled in the criminal law area on the French inquisitorial model. They have a fairly advanced code of criminal law and code of criminal procedure. They have a three-tiered judiciary with a long-standing tradition of judges who were independent. When Saddam came to power, he realized that he couldn't easily subvert the judiciary. So what he did is he started developing special tribunals, so that he developed a special tribunal for the army, a special tribunal in the police, a special tribunal in intelligence, and a special tribunal in his own Ba'ath party, and created all these parallel legal systems. And in the course of time, he obviously eliminated those judges who had the greater level of independence and intimidated others and brought in judges who were more pliable. So while there is much to be done to ferret out, if you will, those judges who have been pliable to the Ba'ath regime as opposed to those who have sought to resist it and those who are in retirement and are perfectly capable of resuming their responsibilities, this has nothing to do with the Iraqi special tribunal, which you have reported on, mm-hmm. and which has the task of prosecuting Saddam and his cronies.
We'll have more with Sharif Bassiouni after a short break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about Iraq's legal system and the reconstruction of it that's underway in that country. Our guest is Sharif Bassiouni, president of the International Human Rights Law Institute at DePaul University in Chicago, which is working on a project to restructure legal education in Iraq. You're invited to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN@npr.org. And I wanted to ask you, you were making the distinction between the special tribunal, which will be prosecuting Saddam Hussein and the other leaders of the regime, men accused of crimes of against humanity and war crimes, that sort of thing, and the regular Iraqi system of justice. That system, you said, was based on many of the other systems around the Arab world. Is it a secular form of a legal code, or is Sharia law part of it?
No, it's totally secular. It's been secularized from actually the early 20s. There was a part of Iraqi law that was until the 60s within the realm of Sharia judges, and that had to do with what we call domestic relations. But the criminal law and criminal procedures have long been secular, with established codes that are just really as good as any other criminal code or code of procedure anywhere else in the world.
Now, what happened to the judicial infrastructure as a result of the war and the chaos that followed?
Well, the judicial infrastructure was largely destroyed. Unfortunately, our troops, when they went there, did not have instructions to stop the looting. Most of our troops were motorized troops, so that the soldiers could not leave their tanks or armored personnel carrier and go and stop the looting. But that, of course, is a political decision whose responsibility really rests on the top echelons of the civilian leadership of the Pentagon. But as a result of that, the infrastructure of the whole country was destroyed. Part of it was, of course, the courts, the law schools. We are facing that in the project that we have, where we have libraries that have been entirely burned or looted, law schools that have been destroyed. Even the windows and doors have been taken away. The same thing is for courts. And so now there's the task of rebuilding the courthouses, of adding furniture to it, because that too has been looted, but also of reinstating all of the administrative personnel, the clerks, the bailiffs, the administrative persons, those who do the typing. All of these people have simply been summarily dismissed. Many of them, or most of them actually, have not been receiving any payments of their salaries, and that's been one of the big crises that has existed throughout the country. And so now all of that has to be put together, but it has to be put together primarily because any societies in Iraq with close to 25 million people needs a functioning legal system. And there are many legal issues other than criminal justice issues. There are issues of inheritance and property and passage of property and land right disputes that need to be solved, which are now pending. But that is completely separate from the special law that was passed by the Governing Council and approved by the American CPA leader to establish a special tribunal to prosecute Saddam and his cronies.
Well, we'll get to questions about Saddam and his cronies in just a minute, but let's take this question now from John in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning out there.
Yeah, my question is fairly simple. In the advocate system in France, if I recall it from law school, you were guilty until you're proven innocent. And you mentioned that the Iraqi system is basically an inquisitorial or pattern on the French system. And I'm wondering if they're going to try to use the process of making him prove himself innocent and to the charges under, as they would have to do if they were following the French model.
Professor Bassiouni?
Well, this has been a frequent misconception in America, and it's completely wrong. The French legal system, the inquisitorial system, by the way, which is followed by most European countries, does not have that notion that you're guilty until proven innocent. That's absolutely wrong. Never was, and never is. The misunderstanding comes from the fact that in these systems, there is something called a judge of instruction. That is a judge who is independent from the judiciary and from the prosecution, whose job it is to collect the evidence. Once that judge, who acts completely impartially, irrespective of what the evidence is, collects the evidence and presents it to court, the conception is that the evidence presented in this way is benefits from a presumption of its validity. And therefore, the defendant who wants to argue against it now has to carry the burden of proof and say, well, the judge of instruction exhumated this mass grave, and he said there were 204 bodies, and I think there were 195 bodies. And so that's how people misconceived the process and said that it was a reversal of the presumption of innocence. It is not. So in the Iraqi system, there will be a judge of instruction. He will gather the evidence, and I say he because there are no women judges of instruction, and that will be presented to court. At court, the defense for Saddam will have to say that this evidence is invalid. However, at the stage of gathering the evidence by the judge of instruction, the defense can raise objections and can have copies of it. So that,
well, let me ask a question on that point. And again, I'm going back to the attorney appointed by Saddam's wife as one of the 20 lawyers who will represent him. This is Mohammad Rashdan. He asked today, on what basis was the court set up, who appointed the judges, and what laws is it subject to?
Well, I think the questions raised not only by the defense team of Saddam, but by most Iraqi and Arab jurists, has to do with the legitimacy of the tribunal. It doesn't have to do with the procedures. We tend to focus on the procedure in America, but in Iraq and in the Arab world, they're focusing on the legitimacy of it. They're saying the governing council appointed by the United States through the CPA has no legal or legitimate authority to pass a new law under which Saddam could be tried. And in that respect, they are correct to a large extent. If the new law would have not been passed and somebody would have said, we are going to try Saddam Hussein under the 1969 Iraqi Criminal Code, which makes murder, manslaughter, rape, torture crimes, nobody would have had any basis to challenge the prosecution or to challenge its legitimacy.
Another question raised by the defense team, and that regards security. They should provide us with international protection. Do they want to slaughter all the lawyers? If the court is not capable of ensuring a proper defense, is this the justice they are thinking of delivering?
Well, I think the statement came as a result of the fact that the defense team floated some requests and saying, if we are to have an effective defense, we would like this, that, and the other. And I think they got back an answer that the government is not going to be responsible for their security, and that what they're saying is, yes, the government should be responsible for our security.
This is obviously going to be a question not only for defense lawyers, but for witnesses as well.
It will, and I think it will get to be particularly nasty because you have to imagine that right now the prosecution is being prepared by a team from the Department of Justice.
The U.S. Department of Justice.
U.S. Department of Justice. And it's really going to have U.S. fingerprints all over it. The evidence is going to be presented in a way that, as one of your earlier questioners said, what about embarrassing things for the U.S.? So the case is going to be structured in a way that no embarrassing questions for the U.S. can come up. Example, during the war between Iraq and Iran, the U.S. provided the Iraqis with intelligence information as to where to target the Iranians.
Satellite photographs.
Satellite photographs, and I was, you know, I understand there was other intelligence briefings and information as well. Apparently, the U.S. had a role, as well as many Western European countries, in helping the Saddam regime not only build weapons of mass destruction, but when he used these weapons, sort of looked the other way. So much of that is going to be the grist of the defense. Now, Salim Shalabi, that you referred to, is trying to draft rules of procedure and evidence that will prevent the defense from raising these questions. At which point, of course, the defense is going to say, you see, you're saying that this is going to be a trial with due process, but you're not allowing us to raise that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of, call it bugs in the system now, and hopefully between now and when the trials start, that law will be amended and some of these bugs will be removed.
Sharif Bassiouni, we'll check back in as the procedure moves ahead and as this trial approaches. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Sharif Bassiouni is a law professor at DePaul University in Chicago, president of the International Human Rights Law Institute at DePaul, and joined us from his office in Chicago.